This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Sophie. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Baseball.
Bruce Levine.
It's great to talk some baseball.
Score Baseball Insider, covering the Cubs and White Sox for more than 30 years.
Bruce Levine is a newsbreaker.
Inside the Clubhouse co-host.
Great being with you, talking baseball.
Bruce Levine.
That's a really good question, Bruce.
See, Bruce has the first hard question.
With Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Always a joy to talk to our buddy Bruce Levine. David out today, Brad Biggs, the football man of the Tribune, one of the great baseball minds of our time, according to John Heyman, joins us now. Bruce joins us on the Aturo Hotline. New tires for spring? Check it out, aturo.com. Hey, Bruce, how are you?
Good morning. Hey, stop beating up Brad, okay? He knows his baseball.
No, John Heyman was very impressed with Brad. That's what I'm saying. Brad, you know, I told him during one of the breaks, I've seen his baseball card. I know what a storied picture he was back in the day. So he's
John
always
Heyman?
Followed the game. Yeah.
Heyman or Brad?
No, Brad.
Oh,
Brad
okay.
was a player, and he used to
not really.
He used to overpower people with your fastball, and I believe
he's a total screwball. We saw real power pitching yesterday out at the rate. There was a lot to watch out there, and I don't know how White Sox fans felt, but you know it was intriguing, you know, to even think about the idea that you know this guy you know is going to come back, and you know try to throw a no hitter against you. I've talked to you know him so many times, you know, before about his mindset before he starts a game. And you know, from the beginning of his career, Crochet's always told me he's intent on throwing a no-hitter every time he goes out there, right? And he was certainly on his way yesterday. That was dominant stuff to watch.
Now, he was at 96, I think, when he gave up the single, Bruce. Like, they wouldn't have let him go in the ninth, would they?
It's really funny. You know, I went to talk to Crochet and to Alex Cora, the manager of the Red Sox, after the game, went straight there, and Cora said that he had already had some conversations with him in the sixth inning about what was going on, and that we're going to let you go as far as you can, but he'd already thrown 100 a couple times, and he said it was going to be a real toss-up as far as when the pitch count started to get up there. So he said, and it's a really interesting quote, he said he might have been the happiest guy in the ballpark when Mydroth got the base hit.
Yeah, well, because the GM might be calling too. Like, he can have a conversation with the pitcher all he wants, but the Alex's boss might have some marching orders for him, I would think.
It's just crazy to hear a manager say, you know, and you guys have the sound in there if you want to later. You know, I was the happiest guy in the ballpark when the kid got a hit, because you know, it took the pressure off of him from having to leave him in there to throw a no hitter on a you know it was a decent day out there, but you know you got a commodity that you just signed for $170 million, and you know he's the face of that pitching staff moving forward. You can't mess around with just you know trying to have an award day.
An award day against the White Sox lineup. Like, I mean, let's be real.
Yeah, well, you know, I give the White Sox and Cubs pitchers tremendous credit for this weekend. I don't know which way you guys want to go, but the whole weekend long, the White Sox pitching staff starters were outstanding, and the Cubs were just monumentally outstanding against the, you know, arguably the best team and best offense in baseball.
How can they, like, Ben Brown takes a larger role here with the Justin Steele development, right? How can they get that Ben Brown that pitched in L.A. to be more consistent? Because I think you go back to last year and you've seen glimpses of it, but sometimes he's a guy that has a really difficult time even getting to the fifth inning.
Biggest number on Brown's line, zero walks.
Yeah, 70% okay. Strikes yesterday, I think.
Yeah, so I mean, that's an amazing number. Here's what the Cubs pitching staff did against the Dodgers this weekend. Otani, 1 for 12. Betts, 2 for 10. Freeman, 1 for 7. That's dominant pitching, you know, by the Cubs starters, and the bullpen stood up as well. So, feel good about the Chicago Cubs. They went to L.A. and they took care of business.
There is that nasty bit with Justin Steele out for the year, Bruce, and we've been talking about it. And just, you know, you don't make a trade for Kyle Tucker and then realize it's like kind of a one-and-done situation unless you're going to pay $500 million plus. And then run out of pitching. Do they make a move? Do they eventually make a move? Do they try to get by for a little bit? How do they approach what is kind of a worst-case scenario with Steele out for the year?
Well, I give the Cubs front office some credit because they're prepared with some depth, you know, going forward. Is it going to last more than through the month of April? We don't know because injuries keep piling up for all major league teams, pitching staffs. But, you know, Ray got through almost four innings yesterday after being in the bullpen and threw 68 pitches. I think the 68 pitches is more important than the results themselves, is that he's getting stretched out. He'll be out there again when they need a fifth starter. The good news is in the next 12 days, the Cubs have four games off. So they can start mixing and matching with some of their starting pitching as well. But, you know, Ray is stretched out. Wicks is down there, stretched out at AAA as well. So there is depth there. And, you know, that is the idea. Are they going to be as good as Justin Steele for a complete year? You know, very doubtful. That's a huge loss. And obviously the Cubs weren't prepared for that, ready for that as far as the emotional part. But, you know, you move on, next man up, all that good talk that, you know, you always say when you lose a very good player. And I hope that they haven't lost a catcher in Kelly as well. They said a contusion on that hand when he got hit yesterday. But, you know, one of the hottest hitters in baseball and catching great along with him, Maya, you don't want that messed up. Hopefully he's not going to be out very long.
What's a realistic timeline for when Javier Assad could potentially help them out either at the back end of the rotation or helping fill out some depth in the bullpen?
Probably 2 weeks. So they're planning on him having two starts at AAA, one tomorrow, I believe, and then 5 days from then, and then another 5 days, you know, if he's going into the rotation or he's going to be in the bullpen, that they'll have to decide that. But I'd say 2 weeks from this week, that's probably the realistic time for him to be ready. If he gets stretched out, starts getting 75, 80 pitches in his starts.
You know, there was a story over the weekend from Bob Nightingale that the Cubs had gone to PCA and were talking extension with him. The report said $75 million, and then somebody reported that it was inaccurate. Where have you heard anything about such a thing? Would it make sense to get that done? What is your priority in terms of now? Does that change?
So after the game yesterday, he talked to the reporters in L.A., and he did say that the Cubs came to him with a proposal, and he said that, for right now, want to concentrate on baseball, that he was really happy that they cared that much. They want to come at him and try to tie him up. But in his mind, there's no rush. And in the reality is he signed for 6 more years, okay? He doesn't even have a complete year in the major leagues in yet. So with that in mind, there's no rush. But, the idea that the Cubs want to sign up what they consider to be a star player of the near future, you know, I think Cub fans should feel good about that. I know Armstrong said he did.
Yeah, I mean, that you're with these kind of deals, and I think Christian Campbell, the Red Sox, just did one. You're almost only talking about kind of
how much service time
they've got.
Yeah.
And
right.
That type of thing. So this is the kind of thing that could get done. Maybe it doesn't get done until next year. Who knows? But that he's and he had a whale of a ball game yesterday.
Oh,
but
boy.
That he's in discussion for something like this, I think bodes well for both him and the Cubs.
Well, you know, think back to Ronald Acuna's contract that he signed 3 years ago for I think it's 4 years ago now, for $100 million, right, for 10 years. And how much money did he leave on that table, okay?
Oh, boy.
I mean, he's had some injury problems, but, you know, one dominant year where he's the best player in baseball. He's coming back, I think, in another week or two. So when agents and players get together, they go, we don't want to do an Acuna contract because it costs ourselves $300 or $400 million in a year or two. And that's exactly where he would be right now, going along, looking at the Guerrero contract and the one that's being talked about for Tucker.
The White Sox ended up winning a series, Bruce. I think we came in here on Friday feeling like the sky was falling, feeling like they were heading to a similar season as last year and contemplating whether we could handle it. They still may be as bad as they were a year ago, who knows, but they had a great weekend.
They pitched, you know. Martin 6 innings on Friday. Perez only gave up two runs and almost 5 on Saturday. Yesterday, Smith, you know, under the radar because of Crochet, 6 innings, just 2 runs. You know, they're going to win some ball games with good starting pitching. So the young pitchers, Perez isn't one of those. But, you know, certainly those young pitchers have impressed in the early part of the year. And you can be encouraged about it. The offense, you know, it's just, they laid that 11 runs on Boston on Friday, but, you know, it's going to continue to struggle. They're guys that have to hit. The good news is over the weekend, you saw Robert start to hit the ball, his first home run in many months. Vaughn has to get going. That's just difficult to watch. He had a hit yesterday, but he really has to be able to do a little bit better.
Miguel Vargas went from being elite prospect, and I realize that was a while ago, but elite prospect to just can't hit the baseball.
You're right, and there's work to be done there. Okay, so again, but are they are they a more watchable team for White Sox fans in 2025? I think the early results say yes, they are. Are they going to be exciting and score a lot of runs? I don't know. I do like Meadroth, and hopefully they can get the Montgomerys going, the two Montgomerys going to the minor leagues. Those are things to look forward to if you're White Sox.
Bruce, I brought that up earlier, and not to beat David's dead horse because he's not here, but Colson Montgomery above high A, okay, above high A, a .207 batting average across more than 700 at-bats.
Yeah.
That doesn't work.
Right. So normally we don't talk about batting average if the slug is there, but there's not a lot of slug when you're hitting .207, right?
Right, and there's a whole lot of the whole lot of strikeout.
So one of the scouts I talked to about Montgomery at the end of spring training said, put this into perspective. He might not hit now. He's got great power ability. They think he'll hit for power. I think he'll hit for power. And he would be coming out of the draft this year at age 22. if you put in perspective of after the White Sox drafted him out of high school from Indiana at age 18. So hopefully that this is not a washout and there is time for Montgomery to start showing what Chris Getz said on Friday, you know, talking to us media people. He said, I have great belief in him. He's going to be good. He has great belief in him. He feels he's going to be good. So the confidence factor, at least from the conversation with Getz, is still there.
I hear that. That's the only thing Getz can say publicly right now, right? Like that's what he has to say. I wonder, I got to think, I got to believe, Bruce, that if you rewound this a little bit, they would not have been as aggressive in promoting him. He barely spent any time at AA, and it's just been such a struggle that you hope he can get going. So
Brad, give him credit for one thing. They didn't force him to the major leagues out of spring training.
Well,
they could have easily done that. The conversation was much like that. That we were going to give him every opportunity to make it. They as a group, including Venable, who is a very solid baseball man, a part of that right now, said he's not ready. You know, and so again, he's in the minor leagues. I think your point about spending more time in Birmingham, you know, is a good one. He's got to stay in the minor leagues. He's got to dominate at the level he's at before he comes up here. That means defensively and offensively as well. It's got to show he's a major league caliber player now.
So I know this is irrelevant, but it's a name. Caleb Killian was released, and I get it. You know, he was a guy that came up early, and there were great hopes for him, but what's your take on what went wrong there?
Well, a lot of people are just talking about the trades that they made and PCA is the only one that really showed up here from the trades of the big guys. But, you know, did you want Bryant? Did you want Baez? Did you want Rizzo? Was that not the right move by the Chicago Cubs front office as far as moving
them? No. I'm just wondering what happened to him. I mean, there was a moment there, Bruce, as you know, where he seemed ahead of the group and then quickly kind of fell behind and is no longer heard of. And, you know, we're sitting here, people texting in different ideas for how to replace a Justin Steele, and his name came up, and I thought, God, didn't they just release him? And it just happened.
Did. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, you know,
that's
again,
baseball. I know. Guys don't develop or whatever happens.
Right. I mean, you know, Ben Brown, nobody heard of him up until a year and a half ago, right? And then look at him right now, the power arm that the Cubs needed in that rotation with a bunch of arms that nobody throws more than 92 miles an hour, 93. I think Boyd was thrown pretty hard the other day around hitting 94. But the reality is you need that power arm. You need those power arms as part of the rotation. I think the underreported story from this weekend will be that Presley went through that ninth inning yesterday with a clean inning against two of the best hitters in baseball. And I think he and the Cubs both needed that.
And I'm glad you brought that up. What's your degree of confidence that he can hang on to this closer job? Because it's looked tenuous, I think.
I think he'll be fine, but I think you need fortification there, okay? So if you're going out there and, you know, as Mike said, you know, do you need to go out there and get a starting pitcher? Yeah, maybe, but maybe more important is a real big bullpen arm. That's what you need to throw in there with some of the guys in there. And the bullpen, you know, it has the makings of being decent out there. It's just you need that power arm at the end. And in the ninth inning, it's just not all – you can't always locate your breaking ball like Presley does. And he's been a great pitcher in baseball for many years, but, you know, we've seen early in the year, you know, the command's not there in the breaking pitch. You have to throw a fastball at 93 and it gets hit. So those are the things you look at as Hoyer and company are trying to improve moving down through April and into May.
Great stuff, Bruce. Great catching up with you. Appreciate your time as always.
Guys, have a great day.
Thanks, Bruce.
That is Bruce Levine. Always fun to talk some baseball with Bruce. We are going to get back to the NFL draft. We're going to talk to Bigsy about his draft 2.0 and We're taking your questions. You can text us or you can call 312-644-6767. It's Mully and Haw with our guy Brad Biggs on the Score.
You're looking at it multiple ways. One, it's like short-term, long-term thinking. Two, it's, you know, there's the certain positions, like the premium ones, where, you know, it's not guaranteed you're going to be a spot to get one of those players. So if you end up with a surplus, then let's just figure it out after that and compete, and the best guy wins. And if someone's got a young guy's got to wait, then he has to wait. Or, you know, other things can happen where other, you know, the guys that are currently in those spots can get opportunities for other teams. So there's a lot of different options that can pop up. But we're kind of weighing all of those things and put it into the equation of how we're going to handle the, you know, really all the picks, but 10 especially.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. That's Ryan Poles, the general manager of the Chicago Bears, and I'm very curious to see what they do at 10. And I'm very curious to see how I feel about the pick they make. In other words, when 10 is selected, am I going to feel that's the guy that Ryan Poles had zeroed in on? Or am I going to feel that's the guy that Ryan Poles was told to draft? And I don't mean that as bad as it sounds. But they've hired a head coach who is making significantly more money than the general manager. And I would imagine he will have more influence if he chooses to exercise it. And I am very curious. I believe it was last year the Bears had the 10th overall pick, and they drafted a wide receiver that the general manager said after the draft he wanted to move up to take. But his assistant general manager talked him off the ledge. So he wanted Roma Dunze so bad that he was going to move up to try to get him, and he was talked down.
Yeah, they
down.
Were nine. I think maybe the idea was to jump up to eight with Atlanta. And the Falcons stunned everyone.
By taking
Michael Penix Jr. there. Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see, I think, what kind of group or packaging of players they have after the first 2 days of the draft.
Okay.
Meaning
with the 2 second rounders and the third rounder.
And they've got a third rounder.
What positions they take?
Yeah. What positions, what skill sets do the guys at those positions have that you highlight and you say, hey, this guy's exciting for the Bears because of this? You know, like
our Brett, when that moment comes, will we be looking at starters? You would imagine the guy taken with the 10th pick would be able to start next season, right?
Yeah.
But what about the 2 second rounders? Could there be a depth piece on the offensive or defensive line? Well, defensive linemen play, but offensive linemen, not necessarily. If they get a guard with one of the 2 second round picks, would that guy play?
Only if your solution at left tackle winds up going down to like plan C and Joe Tooney's out there at left tackle.
Wow. Is that a possibility?
I'm not saying it's something they're talking about, but
I'm looking
at, if you look at the depth chart. Right now, if you look at the depth chart and you say, well, it's, like, this is something they could arrive at one way or the other.
Yeah. It's Braxton Jones. But he's got an ankle injury.
Yeah.
And he's coming off a surgery, and he's not going to be able to start. He may be able to start the season, but he won't start in training camp,
let's,
right?
I think I said when I was on with you guys last week, like, late July is a ways off. Let's
see
just,
how he's healing.
Yeah, let's just be real open-minded about this in terms of when, are we going to see him out there at minicamp next week? No. Right, he's not going to be lining up out there. Even although it's kind of.
But
like
haven't
a
they said? Haven't they said he won't be available to start a training camp?
Yeah, but like, you see these projections for these guys that are way off both directions. Let's see where he's at.
Is Kieran Amagaji a legitimate option if he can't start the season? And I'm talking about.
Oh yeah, and. That's just hard. What are we basing that off of?
We're basing it off of he didn't seem to be able to play last year, mainly because he didn't seem prepared to play. He didn't have any offseason. Right. So I'm saying now that he's had time, how much better could he be?
Well, you would hope he's a heck of a lot better because they used a third-round pick in him, and he's healthy, and he's got time on the field. But the coaching staff hasn't worked with him yet. The off-season program started, and that's consisted of weight room stuff, and they sit in the meeting room.
Could use some weight room stuff.
Yeah, they could all use some of that,
Just saying.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with it.
And so... Yeah, do they have to be starters that you're getting with your day two pick? Let's see where they're at. Let's see what position they're at. What they need to do is they need to be picks that make the Bears a better football team. They need more talent. There is good reason for optimism about the arrival of Ben Johnson and the new coaching staff.
No question.
They're a last-place team that won 5 games. Generally speaking, you go 5-12, you're picking higher than 10th in the draft. There was a lot of bad football this past season, so they're stuck here with the 10th pick, and they've got to get more players because old-school football people will tell you it's more about Jimmys and Joes than X's and O's. At the end of the day, it down. It's more about who your players are than what your scheme is. I think Ben Johnson was the right guy for the Bears. But there were people that worked themselves into a tizzy with excitement because of the departure of Luke Getsy, because they were going to have a new offense and it was going to look different and this, that, and the next. And prior to that, it was Matt Nagy and his crew was gone, and Luke Getsy's here, and then Nagy showed up, and it was they got rid of Dow Loggins and the John Fox offense. It's just this cycle that
keeps now you
repeating.
Have a guy that has built
a
number one overall offense in the NFL.
Well,
not overnight.
He had a huge hand in it.
Yes.
The GM in Detroit built the offense by getting those players.
No question.
And a couple of those offensive linemen were there before that group arrived. And I'm optimistic about the guy. I'm just saying they got to get some more players.
And I agree with that. I'm just, like I said, how much influence does he have on the draft? I don't think he's going to be the guy picking the third rounder. But I'm sure he's the guy saying, we need this, this, and this, and then you.
And
go
this is
find
what we hope it looks like.
That's
like
it.
This is sort of our prototype for this position.
Now, if he wants a running back, if he says, "Well, Ashton Jeanty has to be the guy," that's different. And I don't know that he would say that.
Yeah, I don't.
But I'm just curious as to. I think that his feelings on the players will influence the general manager, even if he doesn't or didn't like them as much to begin with. I think if he starts talking about a guy, the general manager will do his due diligence and look into the guy, and maybe he ends up taking the guy.
And we're getting close, right? We're getting real close because you figure by the end of this week, your draft board is pretty much set.
Have they brought in everybody yet? Have they gone through that process?
Yeah, and that ends here real soon. But what you can have is the Zoom meetings, and a lot of teams take major advantage. Like you can have – those are almost unlimited. I think you can only do one a day with a guy, but there are much looser restrictions on your ability to get together, spend time with players, get to know them, understand them, maybe test their acumen a little bit and things of that nature. But you've got a very late Easter this year, which I bring up because, generally speaking, these teams want to let their scouts spend the weekend with family.
Have an egg hunt.
Dress up as the Easter Bunny. So... maybe your board is pretty much set by the end of the week. Then you get into it next week where you're making some adjustments. What could come in next week would be the medical recheck information.
Right.
And that's kind of
huge
stuff that you're going to have a certain number of guys on your board that are going to have, you know, whatever, a question mark, whatever you want it to be next to them, because we need to fill in the information.
So the Bears will take Abdul Carter with the 10th pick.
Yeah, he's not going to be there, buddy.
I'm joking. I'm saying the medical recheck is going to be.
Yeah, right.
Drew just came out last week and said he's fine.
Oh, yeah, of course he's fine.
So
yeah.
So that means the medical recheck's going to be a disaster.
Yeah, who knows?
I'm taking a joke.
Yeah, no, I know you're making a joke.
I would love to see that
guy.
Yeah,
well, that's like
right.
In the medical info. Like
the medical,
when a guy has a surgery, like, is he ahead of his schedule? Well, let me know the next time a team announces that.
Yeah.
Hey.
Oh, this guy is not
Joe
healing.
Smith is behind schedule. Like, actually, the surgery went awry. We found more problems than we expected. Like, when you get that update from him,
well, we shouldn't have had a surgery because we messed it up.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah,
that would be beautiful.
Yeah, so everybody thinks everybody's ahead of schedule. But Abdul Carter should be,
I
would think he'll
He's
be okay.
Player. I know.
And I would expect him to
If you could have any player in this draft.
For the Bears?
For the Bears. Who would it be? Just out of curiosity, who do you think's the best player in the draft?
I would have a hard time picking anybody other than Abdul Carter.
Yeah.
Just look at what the going rate is for these elite edge rushers. And look at what they're paying Montez Sweat now.
Yes.
And where he was in the marketplace when the deal was signed.
Yes.
And where that marketplace has
gone
to since.
You're right.
Like, I would like the idea of that. But you could make a... You could make a compelling case for a player like Travis Hunter, although I had an interesting conversation with a guy yesterday, and we were talking about cornerbacks.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, you know, you get to the players that are in that pool after Hunter, and he said, wait a minute. He says, Hunter's a wide receiver. And
really?
He said, that's what he is first. And we had an interesting check.
I
and
thought it was the other way around. I thought he was going to start corner and then have some
who knows what the
plays.
Who knows what the team that ends up drafting Travis Hunter does with him. But this guy has been in Colorado. I don't know how many times. He was at the pro day last week. Like it's not like he's a casual observer from a distance who has seen some film and listened to people in his team's meetings talk about the player.
Yeah,
like he's. You know, and this is his evaluation, and he said it's not even close.
Wow.
That
he's a better wide receiver than he is a corner.
This guy's opinion, and that it's not close though.
Yeah, that's
yeah. He said he's a good corner. He thinks he's, you know, elite wide receiver ability.
Hmm. That is very intriguing. You know, because it's not considered a great receiver class.
No, it's not. It's not. And it's not a, you know. And, you know, what's Travis kind of want? What's his input going to be? What are the Browns or Giants going to want to do with them? Maybe he gets to New England.
All right. So we had a text earlier, and the question was, and we'll answer this when we come back, what would be the most surprising position that the Bears could take in the draft? In other words, what would be kind of a surprise that they could take? Not that they will take, but, you know, I think we all have a sense of a certain a running back, a certain tight end, a certain tackle, whatever it might be. What would be the surprise, either player or position, if they decided to shock the world? At number 10. We'll discuss that next. It's Mullion Haw with Brad Biggs on the Score.
Chicago's in kind of this weird spot, right? They're hoping for quarterbacks to go. I think potentially two could go before they pick at 10. And then there's about six blue chip players. I named five of them. I would throw Jalen Walker in there. I think Campbell's going to go at four, the offensive tackle. Will Campbell from LSU to go to the Patriots at four would be my guess right now. And so you get down to 10, and it's like, who's left? I just had this mock draft that came out today, mock 3.0. If Tyler Warren's there, you run it in.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Our guy, Brad Biggs, football man for the Chicago Tribune, is in this morning. And that was Todd McShay breaking down his 3.0. And he did that with later in the day. It wasn't us. The afternoon show. Did that last week. And, you know, I mean, he's a guy. He used to be at ESPN. So I get it. So what if that is the scenario, Brett? I mean, you know, the question that was asked by a texter earlier, it holds. What would be a surprise? It wouldn't be a surprise if they took the tight end, even though they have a tight end.
Might be. Like, the question is, and I think Todd kind of alluded to it, is does it get to 10?
Yeah.
When the guy I chatted with yesterday, for a while that, we talked about Travis Hunter, and I threw that one at him. I said, does Warren make it to 10? Is he an option for the Bears at 10? And he's like, I don't think he gets there, was what he thought, unless some A team or more than one team reach for need ahead of 10, so in the top 9 picks, that he thinks Warren comes off the board before the Bears are on the clock.
So what would be a surprise?
Yeah, I think a surprise position. Linebacker?
Is there a linebacker?
Jihad Campbell, I think, is the best one out of Alabama. You know, he's probably—
Isn't he more like—
Probably go somewhere in the teens,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, like 15 kind of?
Yeah, but, you know, you're looking— Everybody— You know, somebody might have him at 15. Somebody else might have him at 9,
yes,
right? Somebody might have him at 23. You just don't know.
There isn't another corner that they could surprise the world with, the kid from Michigan.
Well, Will Johnson from Michigan, how does he run? Does he run well? Are you comfortable with his speed?
Yeah.
And that's going to be the knock on him, okay? So, is the speed.
So
is
then your buddy who said that that he didn't believe that that Hunter is a corner.
Yeah.
Who's his
top corner?
Well,
he can play corner. He doesn't think that corner's his best position. Yeah. You've got Will Johnson. You've got Barron.
Texas
from the Texas Longhorns.
Yes.
Jedi Barron. So you've got some other options there. And history will tell you that to find starting corners, you, generally speaking, got to fire on those guys in the first two rounds.
Right.
That because nobody ever has enough corners.
No,
you run out, and you're looking for depth and more talent, and so those guys go early. So corner would be a bit of a surprise. Safety at 10 would be a surprise. There's a couple really good safeties, I think, in this draft, but to go that high
with a non-premium position,
that's why I say surprise, though, because if they did it, they're telling you that Nick Eamon-Worry of South Carolina, they love, and they think he could be a Swiss Army knife and have a ton of value, being able to do a lot of different things on the back end of the defense. You get Starks out of Georgia, who has shown the ability to play nickel, which enhances his value. The Bears just paid their nickel guy. So I think safety would be a surprise.
I'm just trying to think of the premium positions that could be a surprise. Is there a pass rusher that deserves— I mean, they could use a pass rusher.
Oh, yeah.
If you could get a good one at 10, that would not be something to boo. You would cheer that mightily. Would the kid from Michigan ever drop, the interior guy?
I talked about him with the guy I had yesterday on the phone.
Hmm.
P- probably not. Yeah. You know, those interior guys, and it's a good draft for defensive tackles now. So, you know, maybe that affects Mason Graham a little bit. I'm a little curious to see where Jalen Walker, the edge rusher from Georgia, goes. Like,
yeah.
He's a little bit of a smaller guy,
but he's a
super athletic. They could
relentless kind of player.
Yeah, yeah, and I mean, should be an impactful guy in the NFL. You count on probably. I would, you know, he's going to help somebody out, and I think he goes top 10.
All right, we're going to come back with Bob Nightingale. We'll talk to Bob about his report about what's going on with the Sox and the Cubs, and we'll do that next. It's Mully and Haw. We've got Brad Biggs on Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the Score.